On this episode of the Fear Me Out podcast, I welcome back Darren Stockton. He was on the podcast maybe 6 months ago, but this episode is going to be about him as a professional man. He's a health coach and a physical trainer. Darren and I have the pleasure of working with people in common whenever we can because our approaches to healing and helping people get strong both mentally and physically, we match up pretty well. So I hope you enjoy this episode with Darren Stockton. There are two basic motivating forces, fear and love. When we're afraid, we pull back from life. When we're in love, we open up to all that life has to offer with passion, excitement, and acceptance.
Coming to you from our studio in Santa Barbara, California, this is the Fear Me Out podcast. We're not your typical self-help program. Our show takes a deep dive into those psychological issues that affect us on a daily basis. We hope to shift your perspective and have you experiencing emotions differently. Now, Dr. Dana Saperstein.
In this episode, I welcome Darren Stockton, actually a returning guest, who spoke about some really tense issues having to do with his daughter. And he, as I described him back when he was here, he's one of my heroes. I really admire this man. He's an incredibly devoted father. And he and I actually really like to work together. He's a health coach and a physical trainer. And we share the same or similar philosophy in terms of emotional and physical healing. So I wanted to ask Darren to come on the show and talk about his perspective and how he does his thing, because it's quite fascinating. And all the people that he and I've worked together with have told me how much they appreciate what he has done for them. So welcome, Darren. You want to give us an intro on who you are, and we'll go from there?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Dana. Thanks for having me back again.
Sure.
I'm really excited to be here.
Good.
Really excited. So yeah, I can tell people I work as a health coach and a physical trainer. My sporting career, I was a professional athlete for a lot of years, a bicycle racer. And then after ending my own competitive career, got into coaching people of all sorts. I started out first coaching professional athletes in the sport of motocross, which I was really involved in. And then as I branched out of that and set up just a regular hourly practice up in Santa Barbara, it's been great. I've, you know, worked with clients from kids all the way up to 80-year-olds with hip replacements and just about everything in between.
You're also a designer. I understand you've designed some, are they tires for mountain bikes?
Yeah. Mountain bike tires.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have, during my competitive racing career, I raced road bikes and then downhill mountain bikes, and got into doing tire design for one of my sponsors. So I do have a real design oriented part of my mind, but that definitely carries over into how I build people's programs and how I lay out and how I look at long term and helping affect somebody's health positively.
You know, that, and to me, anybody who can invent anything is, I think, is amazing. It's such a great use of imagination, and it sounds really fun. So what is a health coach? What's your definition of being a health coach?
Well, my definition of being a health coach, and that's a great question, you know, as I have like a quote unquote got a personal trainer certificate, and I always thought about the differences between a trainer and a coach. And the way that I look at it is a trainer who is somebody who you maybe come in and do your hour and a half, and they work on a kind of a narrower window with you. It might just be your physical preparation, whereas a coach really looks at everything, at least, and that's the way I look at it as a health coach. You know, you really can't divorce the body from the mind when it comes to health, which all the science says they're interrelated. And so I really look at the whole picture of somebody when I'm looking at coaching them. And as it relates to food, as it relates to their health, and really try and put a whole picture together involving their health. And so as you can't separate the emotional from the physical side, the mind from the body, really looking at, and I guess this is for me, as I first started out as a trainer, when I was a quote unquote trainer and not a coach, and would look at things a little bit more from the physical side. And then myself, through, you know, if people are interested to listen to my previous podcasts, some of the journey I've been on through the emotional side, it really showed me how much I, in order to tackle the emotional problems that I had to do, which were something that I had never experienced, I really pulled from everything I had learned from the physical side. In terms of preparation, in terms of the process I used to kind of check in on my own health to stay strong and resilient. And so when I think of being a health coach, I'm helping coach people to really affect their entire life. You know, you might tell somebody, hey, don't eat these foods and eat these foods. Or say, you might say, for instance, don't eat these foods, right? They're bad for you. But if that's what they've been eating for 10 years, they don't know what to replace it with. And so I will go down to go up to somebody's house, walk through their kitchen and say, hey, here's everything that's taking out. Here's our donation box, the trash box, but then take them down to the store and say, here's what you're gonna put in place. And I do that with people. And that's part of coaching. And you might think, oh, well, everybody knows that. But really, you realize that a lot of people don't, or they need a little bit of help with that. So
I didn't know that you did that. So I have a favor, actually.
Yeah.
Candy comes to me, not the food bank.
Candy?
Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm joking.
Oh, I was going to say, don't get me started about sugar, but yeah. So the food part of it, you know, the diet is really important, you know, what we put into our bodies. And it affects not only your ability to just produce energy from a physical standpoint, but as you well know, can affect your mental outlook and your mood as well. By what types of food you eat, do you eat something that gives you steady energy, or does it kind of spike you and drop you down? And so that side of it, you know, the food, how your diet relates. And then also in general, really just using athletics, and this doesn't have to be like a pro athlete, this is for anybody, but really the process that you go through to get fit and kind of learn about your body and develop a program and have some long-term goals, I've really found for me was the resiliency that helped me see through the most difficult emotional times that I could have ever imagined. It's what guided me. Like, it was my lighthouse that when I didn't know what was going to happen and I was kind of lost and facing really scary stuff, I would just be like, all right, I know I've got a good process here. If I just believe in myself and know that there's going to be highs and lows, but look to a distance and focus on my goal to get there, it'll help pull me through. And it did. And it has. And so I really like to use that to help people prepare for difficult emotional work, you know, when they have it. If you can help people understand the process of preparing to do something difficult, in this case, emotional work, you know, therapy, what you would work with, by using physical work to help train them to prepare for that.
Can you give me an example?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could give you plenty. I guess in looking at, if I looked at somebody and myself, right, you're having to deal with difficult emotional stuff. And so physical preparation, it starts out like you start out, and depending on where the person is at, you kind of assess and say, okay, we just got to build things up from the beginning. You got to get into where you have a regular health practice, right? This is somebody who it might be hard for them just to get up and get out the door in the morning. Just if they can get out the door, it's good, you know? And a lot of times I found that too with my own emotional work. I mean, God, who wants to dig into really difficult stuff sometimes? And you're just like, oh man, I don't want to deal with that right now, right? It's easy to do. I've done it. You could exercise, you could have a second glass of wine. There's all sorts of ways that people can avoid, you know, digging into that emotional work. And people do the same thing with physical work too.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny, when I first got into being an hourly trainer, like after my career, you know, as an athlete, I got into training just athletes at first. And I was like, oh, well, this makes sense. This was my life. I was an athlete, you know, and it was very easy to kind of follow that. And I had been that person. And then once I started branching out and training all different types of people and realizing the emotional component, that can control us, and also found myself having experienced emotional stress and trauma that I never had in my life. Again, I might be repeating myself here, but, noticing the similarities between the buildup of resiliency that you get from a physical preparation. Like if somebody says, hey, I have a goal that I want to ride up this hill, you know, it's going to take them a half an hour. Well, you don't necessarily just show up and just go ride right up the hill for half an hour. You got to work your body up to that, right? I would imagine somebody, and this is your wheelhouse, but if they were, say, afraid of heights or something, use something basic, the first thing you probably don't do is go, hey, well, let's go right to the top of the Empire State Building and go dangle out on the edge, right? We'll cure you. Yeah. You got to work there in stages, right? You might just stand at the top of something small and then get that, right? You're able to hit that goal. And then you move on to the next one and the next one, and it's exactly the same for physical preparation.
Okay.
And so that process that I've found that helps people feel good about themselves and build inner confidence, like, hey, you know what? I really didn't want to get out the door today. It's foggy and wet, and throw on my clothes and go ride my bike for an hour. But every time you come back from doing that, you feel better about yourself. And it really can show you in the moment how I'm feeling this resistance. I really don't want to do this thing, even though I know it's good to go do it, you know, like from an emotional side, and you just want to put the covers over your head and go back to bed. But you learn that just like on the physical side, if you put the covers over your head and go back to bed, you don't burn those calories. You don't energize your system. You don't do any of that. And so I've found, and I guess I've kind of found myself there, graduated there working with clients, how I really have used for people the physical preparation to prove to them that they're good, they can stick to a schedule, that they can rely on themselves, that they can go through tough stuff. That in a moment, I had one client who I worked with who I was helping her get ready to do a self-supported bike touring trip, her and her husband. And so she was going to Europe and was going to be riding around Europe for, I don't know what it was, a month and a half. And so we had to build up all these small goals along the way of, you know, meeting resistance, starting with a smaller hill, working up until she could finally ride all the way up to the top of Gibraltar, which she had never done. But along that way, along with physical resistance, you know, that her body encountered, like my heart rates up, she would encounter the emotional resistance and bring up that trauma where I actually saw her like lock up on her bike, like couldn't breathe, panting, you know, short, shallow breath. And which I honestly had never experienced with somebody before, but I fell back on the physical side and I'm like, okay, I tried to mirror what I would do for a body with a mind, like to support. And I said, okay, well, shift into an easier gear, slow down a little bit, get a hold of your thoughts, right? Where everything's racing out of control, try and step it back. If you slow down, maybe don't overload your system so much and let's get control of things here. And she was able to do that. And so when she was later by herself months later over in Europe, if those feelings would ever creep in, she had a process for not letting it spin out of control. She said, okay, I know I've experienced this plenty of times. I know what to do. I'll, you know, back this down. I'll do this. And then you make it through that, you know, you slay that beast, that monster that's in front of you. It makes you feel better, right? You're a little more empowered and a little bit stronger as opposed to just turning and running the other way, which we all know only makes the monster bigger.
Right. Right.
And so, yeah, so I would probably say, you know, that those parallels between the physical and the emotional work is what I've, you know, what I've really seen as I've worked with clients across the board.
Before we started the podcast, we were briefly chatting about how people's bodies reveal some of what it is that you find and that I find necessary for people to recognize. Like for me, you know, I was talking about the idea that people hold their breath when we're talking about certain subjects. And that is a person's body's way of telling me that that there is a very strong connection to what they're speaking about and the trauma that they've suffered.
Right.
The other thing that I see sometimes is that people's eyes kind of glaze over and they go into a spontaneous trance without realizing it. Mm. And that's a way of, again, managing the intense emotion that's coming up in the face of their trauma. Your situation that you described was a bit different. Would you mind talking about that?
Yeah. It was really interesting as I was thinking about coming into the podcast and all the ways that it mirrors. And I was thinking about exactly that, about trauma. I just ordered a book called The Body Keeps the Score, which I'm about to dig into, but it talks about trauma. And I was thinking about trauma, and when I go to assess somebody physically, when I'm looking, you know, at the physical side, there's many things you're talking about posture. I mean, first of all, just posture, right? Somebody who's round-shouldered and heads forward and tails kind of tucked, I mean, that's, you know, a defensive posture of every animal in the kingdom, right? If you're tail tucked. So just first of all, noticing, do they come in with their head low? Are they able to focus? Does, you know, their energy seem low? Are they standing up, chest up, kind of like walking in to meet the obstacles head on, or are they more in that defensive posture? And noticing how people tackle that. You can just tell about how they walk in, like how they carry their body. And then as far as trauma goes, for instance, if I'm doing a physical assessment of somebody, I'm having them run through just kind of a range of exercises, say, hey, they can squat well, they can lift well, they can dip well, and all of a sudden they run through an exercise, you notice, okay, something's off here, right? Their body's not moving as it's supposed to be. And I can usually go, okay, it's something around their low back. So I will start asking them, saying, hey, do you remember anything, you know, about your low back from years ago? Like, did you ever, no, I haven't had like any injury. And I know that most of the trauma I'd see at that point, especially if it's somebody, you know, say in their 50s or something, it didn't just show up 3 weeks ago and they walked into my spot. It's been building over years. And so usually if I dig a little more, well, do you remember some accident? Oh, you know, there was that time snowboarding like about 20 years ago that I fell and my back was really, you know, tweaked for a week or two. Well, what did you, just got better. Did you ever go to physical therapist? No, you know, and I can look and see their back locked up. And then from that lockup in that spot in their back, it radiates out. If a joint isn't functioning correctly, then your soft tissue has to take up the strain. So people develop tendonitis, they develop just muscle pain, they develop joint pain, all this stuff. And so identifying that point of trauma and seeing how over time, not only does it kind of dig in and take hold, but then it creates dysfunction stemming out from that trauma. And I was thinking strictly about a person who I'd seen about their back, right side, low back, but it made me think about how trauma emotionally is the same thing. And what I've experienced in my personal life and also seen from other people who have experienced trauma when they're younger, it's like a mirror of the physical trauma, the emotional trauma. And while I was talking to you a bit before about this and just like seeing how it's the same thing, somebody probably has emotional trauma, they bury it in the back, but it's will resurface at time over years, right? It's going to come up. Now, maybe to use the physical metaphor, it might not show up in every single exercise they do, but it's going to show up in a lot of them. And if you don't fix that spot, work out that spot out of their low back, now it's into your hip, it's into your knee, it's into your ankle, it's working up into your mid back. And so it just dawned on me that it's really so similar from what I'm sure you see in clients in terms of trauma getting in and how it will affect a life going, you know, going forward if you don't identify the trauma and work it out.
Sure. This brings up a sort of question in the back of my mind. Because you are an emotionally based person, you find it really important to focus on that. Are there occasions when people are a little bit disarmed, I guess, in a way that what they thought was a physical problem may have an emotional connection to it?
Most people don't really understand how much the emotional side affects the physical side.
Okay.
And that's probably something that I have even learned more as I went through my own emotional trauma and could see how it could manifest even from just tight spots in your body that feel tight. Like men will carry pain and trauma more in their low back and women in their upper back. And you see that, you know, physically manifest itself in clients too. I feel like I maybe wandered off there and didn't quite ask what you were.
No. What I was wondering is, you know, occasionally I'm sure somebody's really surprised by the notion that, that trauma is affecting them physically as much as it does emotionally. And I'm just kind of curious how you handle a situation like that, because occasionally that must be really like trauma gets triggered.
Right.
And I'm assuming that sometimes when a person hasn't moved a part of their body or whatever for a long time and you start helping them move it, that the trauma might get triggered by that movement.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And that happens emotionally, as you're talking about, and also physically as well.
Right.
And so I think that, I know that I've dealt with that, not only with other clients, but myself personally.
Okay.
And I can explain to them what to, like, even if they're caught off guard, I'll say, hey, it's normal.
Oh, okay.
And this is what to expect. And this is what's going to be a part of this. Like, I kind of like lay out the roadmap. And I think the first thing is anytime you're experiencing, encounter something unknown to you, and it might bring up a fear circuitry, to tell them, hey, don't worry about it. This is normal. You're fine. Right. Like, you know, we're going to get through this. That will, one, helps maybe take down the shock of them kind of like going, what? These are, you know, these are interrelated. And really it's just baby steps, you know, and trying to have a few good examples to them of like, this is kind of what has happened in my life, or this is maybe, you know, another example that I have. And so everybody's process is a little different because, you know, we're humans, but that it's okay. You know, what you're experiencing is okay. And yeah, it's part of the process.
Again, I think one of the reasons why you and I do so well in helping people is that you don't pathologize people. You're trying to help them understand that whatever it is that they're carrying is not because there's something necessarily wrong with them,
right,
but because it's correct, based on experience that has created the trauma, either through neglect or through some kind of abuse. Instead of making them feel embarrassed or ashamed of themselves, you normalize it, which is what you just said.
Right.
And that takes a lot of the shame out of the picture because most people blame themselves for the things that happened to them.
Yeah.
Especially as children.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, that leads to a lot of self-destructive behavior, which I'm sure you see, you know, in terms of the weight that people carry and the lack of exercise and the mistreatment with food and all the different ways that people don't take care of themselves that I'm sure, I'm not sure it's shocking to you anymore, but...
Not shocking anymore.
At
the beginning, you know, it's funny when I first started hourly training, because like I said, I had started my training career only working with professional athletes, you know, and all, everybody's got a different story. It's not to say that people haven't had trauma or not, but you know, most professional athletes are like, okay, I grew up in sport. You know, that's how I got into it. I love it. I wanted to go and, you know, do it on my own. I mean, there's some people who are younger who they have like little league parents who force them to do it, but those kids always burn out early and quit it and hate it.
Right.
I think, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought there a little bit.
No, you were telling me that again, how trauma affects people and how you help people when they get triggered.
Yeah. Well, and again, as we were talking about like understanding it, when you get those triggers, I think that, you know, again, the physical preparation helps people get ready for change. You know, you're just rolling along and you're in your safe spot. Well, if you're going to go out and put yourself out on a limb and that's walking rocks at low tide at the beach or riding a bike up a hill or whatever, instantly, you know, your body might have resistance. Like, oh, I'm afraid, I don't want to go do that. And, you know, we both know it's like, if you have a stressor that pops up in front of you, your body has a whole different chemical reaction to it. If you wake up and say, you know what, first thing today, I'm going to go do that thing and face it head on and go on the offensive, as opposed to the whole day of procrastinating, going, oh God, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that, which I've done. And I know this, I'm not high and mighty. I'm like telling you from the trenches, but it has a whole different effect on your body. I mean, even the science side of it, of the chemicals you release. And so that momentum builds, you know, if you avoid the hard things all the time, you just build that pattern. If you go, man, I'm just going to go wake up and go do that right now, it builds a different pattern.
Right.
And so that's that, you know, that big side I see. And I think people are a little bit surprised, you know, at that, how it can work, how you can use the physical side of the emotional side to help get you there. And I remember the one funny thing I was going to say is, you know, when I first started out, I worked with only athletes and then I got into just like hourly training. And I guess for me being around athletes, for the most part, I can't say I didn't have a kid here or there that was making a lot of money that would hit the snooze in the morning. But for the most part, you know, when you're an athlete, it's something you choose to do. You have to wake up in the morning and go out and do it. You know, it's something that you are making a point like, I'm going to go out and do this and face this head on. And so tackling things with that type of mentality, like of, you know, of what can be done if you stand up and go out and fight and go after it is.
Right. Yeah. You know, Darren, you're bringing up a really important point, which is that, you know, as a psychologist, I'm always encouraging people to be in touch with their feelings and to allow their feelings to guide them in the choices they make in their lives. But there are some exceptions to that. And I really believe that sometimes giving into how you feel is a really big mistake. And the example I use is one that I apply to myself because I have a lot of serious physical problems, and I wake up in the morning in an extreme amount of pain. It's probably the worst time of the day for me. So if I gave into those feelings, I would open my closet door, climb in the closet and assume right. the fetal position,
right? Yeah.
And probably spend the whole day there.
Yeah.
So I actually do not give myself the luxury of indulging those feelings. I just stand up, I go to the bathroom, I do my routine, and within a very short period of time, I'm out walking because that's unfortunately all I'm allowed to do now.
Right.
But I do it and I don't veer from it. My wife always teases me and says, God, you're the most disciplined person I've ever met. And my response is, it's not discipline. It doesn't feel like discipline because if I don't do it, I suffer. And when I do it by the end, I'm actually feeling way better because the endorphins get kicked in.
Right.
And then I think you can actually become addicted to the endorphins, which I believe that I am and I'm happy to be.
Because
if I don't, without exception, if I don't do what I know I need to do, it ruins my day.
Yeah.
And luckily, we live in probably one of the most beautiful places in the world.
Right.
So I get to walk in the park and see the sun come up and in the most glorious setting that you could ever imagine. So it's really hard to feel bad under those under those circumstances. So I guess what I'm doing is agreeing with you that if you wait until you feel like doing it, it's not likely to happen.
Right. Yeah.
You know, people come as an example, they say to me, I want to see you. I'm going to learn how to be in a relationship and then I'm going to go out and be in one that works really well. And my response is, well, I'm not sure I can really help you because the only way to do it is by doing it, not by waiting until you feel safe enough to do it.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Or yeah.
Because it takes the experience to prove to yourself that you're capable of it. And hopefully with your guidance, the person feels safe that they're not going to hurt themselves in the process of getting in better shape. And they also feel like you got their back.
Yeah.
And that you're showing them what Darren's version of love looks like, which is to take as good a care of them as they will allow you to take care of them. And I think that because I know you the way I do, that you're a very loving person and that I think that people feel really safe in your hands, if that makes sense. And so it's not just a physical or even a nutritional thing. It's more like maybe you're the first person that's ever come into their life that showed them that you really care about them as a person and you want them to feel like they're worth taking care of themselves.
They're worth it, yeah.
That they're worth it. And that's not always easy.
No, it's not.
Because, you know, if I agree with the way most people feel about themselves when they come to see me, I would tell them they suck also. But luckily, I'm not subject to the prejudice that they have against themselves, and I can see past their fear and past their self-hate and see the lovely person that lives inside most people, and that's what makes my job easy.
Right.
That I can show people what it looks like to be cared for despite how they feel about themselves.
Right.
And I'm assuming, I don't want to make any assumptions, but I'm assuming that that's what you do.
Absolutely. And if you think of that example that you just gave, right, of that moment where you're like, in the moment, you want to go into the closet, right?
Oh, God, yeah.
Because who wouldn't? In that moment right there, you know, and our bodies, you know, have evolved in central nervous system, like where some people like to say humans were lazy. I don't look at it as lazy. We're just very efficient, right? You learn to work your way around things that in the moment might pop up as being uncomfortable, but you can see how, as we are patterned people, right, in the moment, going in the closet is great. But after you get out of the closet, the whole rest of your day is going to suck.
Right.
And maybe the next day because you didn't take care of yourself. And so that pattern building in that critical moment right there, whatever it takes just to decide, like, I don't care. I just got to get out the door and go walk because I know it's going to be better. That's building that positive pattern. If you would have climbed into the closet, now you build that pattern of avoidance, like right in the moment.
Right.
So you're right. You know, I used to, one of my best friends still who I was on the same team as a professional bike racer with years ago, he had stopped racing and had started, you know, working. And he would come through and visit, had a sales job, and he would drive through and he'd come and hang out and spend the night. And he would go sleep out on the guest couch, which was out in the living room. And this was back in the good old days of channel surfing when you had to like hit the button, you know, and the channel would change, it would flash up. So I would go to bed and then I would like maybe have to get up and go out and use the bathroom, and I could see that kind of like blue TV light flashing up on the white wall, and I'm like, oh, he's still up channel surfing, you know, and how hard it was to just like, and you would go loops and loops and loops around the channel, and finally you're like, all right, you know what, I'm finally going to turn it off. And I remember him telling me, he goes, I wish I could harness the chemical. He's all, after going through all the channels this many times looking for something, maybe the modern day version would be looking for something to stream, right? But you could sit there on Netflix for 20 minutes trying to find something to watch. But he goes, I wish I could harness that thing that would make me decide, nope, now's when I'm just turning off the TV and make the decision to go to sleep. And that is that, yeah, like that just that critical moment and like a flashpoint, you can make a decision,
right?
You know, to make a change in your body.
Super important.
Yeah.
So what else should we know about you? What else is important based on your philosophy and how you approach helping people?
Well, I think, that's a big question. You know, through different experiences, a couple of the key features or key things that I weave all the way through is I've learned that every single person is an individual. And while, of course, you know, you have parameters that you work with and you kind of look at somebody and say, okay, we're going to kind of head down this path. There's all sorts of little turnoffs and alleys from that path, and everybody's a little bit different. You could do something that works great for another person and try it with somebody else, and it might only work 50%. So you really have to pay attention. And I do really, other than one group class that I kind of do to help, you know, people out that can't afford it, I just do one-on-one work. I absolutely love it because I can really feel that person and see what they need. I do my best to really have a loose playbook, but when that person walks in the door, to really try and just see what they need and really look at them and say, okay, you know, where is this person at? And from a physical standpoint, somebody that's, you know, I'll notice exactly how they're standing. Some people stand and favor one leg and their right foot is always turned out. You know, it's kind of like the same way emotionally. You can see people who come in and they'll resist a certain type of effort, or they had an injury in their back, and it might take 10 sessions just for somebody to let go of the emotional energy around an injured area, like a back, where I've had somebody try and do a simple hold that most people could do, and their body will literally like go into spasm as they're trying to release the old energy around the trauma of that injury. And so from my side, I have to show up prepared, and mostly that means really ready to be able to focus on what that person needs, and not only the physical cues that I'm seeing, but their energy, you know, that I'm getting. And so from that side of it, I think that it sets me apart. And I really didn't realize, and I know we're talking about this before about this podcast, I'm not a fan of the word empath. for whatever reason, you know, maybe, like I said, maybe that's something for another session to try and work that out of me, but I don't know, but just like different ways around it. But I'm able to, I don't know if it's read people's energy, experience them. I don't want to sound like too tarot carded, but you really do. And I can see the way that people move, see the way that they tackle. If I say, hey, we're going to do this exercise, if their head hangs or if they go, okay, like they're kind of lifting their chest up to meet it. And so one, really paying attention and understanding that I do just have a gift for that.
Okay.
And that's, you know, one of the areas that I've really understood, that I just see things that other people don't pick out. And then the second thing, which I continue to work on too, is then having the courage to bring something up in a moment. If even I have trepidation about it, because I'm going, oh man, I want to say this, but I'm worried that I'm going to offend them or do something that I'm pushing a little bit too far. But also understanding that for me, I've really realized that if I'm in a clear place and that thought comes into my head, I need to bring it up and say it. And I've never had that go bad. And I still have a hard time sometimes getting over that hump for myself, going, oh, I hope I don't offend them, or I hope I don't do something that's going to make them not want to come back, because I really think I can help this person.
Right.
Yeah.
So I actually have some really bad news for you, because that really defines you, both of those characters, as being an empath. But
I know.
But damn, I'm not going to belabor that point, because I don't want you to be offended.
Right.
So how about, let's talk about intuition, because that's really what you're talking about.
Yes.
Is being very much connected intuitively to yourself and being able to tune in to the needs of the people that come, you know, to be helped by you. So do you recognize it as intuition?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that saying of, when is your little voice wrong? I mean, hardly ever.
Yeah.
The hardest part for people, like, that intuition about wanting to say something in the moment, and I guess having the confidence to help guide the person through it. You know, that period where they feel that stress come up, or they feel that real resistance to it. And yeah, I don't like, I haven't liked the word empath, which I really didn't even know that word. I think it was, you know, I've heard too many people use it when I don't.
Right.
I'm an empath this, I'm an empath that. I'm like, all right, whatever. But,
and they can't even tell the difference between, you know, the right and left foot.
Yeah. So again, I maybe forgot the exact.
Well, I was talking about the, you know, the question, idea that, yeah, you really are a very intuitive person, and that,
oh, following your intuition.
Yeah, and that's your sort of maybe sacred connection to yourself and the people that you help.
Yeah, well, I did really realize that, how I went through a long period of life as an athlete, and I realized this later. It's one of the great things about sports that it's taught me, like, in a lot of moments, especially, like, I was a professional road cyclist, which is very, like, fitness based. But then I also race as a professional downhiller, which would be like downhill skiing, but on a bike. And in that, you have to be 100% in the moment. As soon as you doubt yourself and touch the brake, you're going to fall, or you're going to go offline, or you're going to do whatever. And so it was really, and it took me some years to build up the confidence in that sport, that when you enter an obstacle, that you focus on doing it right, and that you're going to succeed. You can't say, oh boy, like, if I was at the start of a downhill race, if I worried about every tree and rock that I could have hit on the way down and broken something, I mean, I would have, like, rolled down with squeaky brakes the whole way, you know. Exactly. I would have never even made it. And so you learn, like, okay, put all of that aside, focus on what you're going to do. And the intuition in the moment of helping somebody rely on themselves. So in a moment, if they feel something like, hey, I should do this, or I should not let myself go down this path, or I should, you know, not let this person talk to me that way, you gotta listen to yourself in the moment, because all of us human beings, we can justify just about anything that we want to.
That's for sure.
Right? And you get that intuition that pops in your mind. You're like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go do that. And then you're like, but maybe not, maybe this, maybe that. And then you start kind of trying to, like, justify and talk yourself around it. And then I find you can just get lost. You overthink it too much. And so that point of intuition, where if you feel something, trying to teach people to just follow it in the moment, you know, and when you're out exercising, whether it's in a gym or outside on a bike or a hike, you can get those physical cues so fast that, again, I find that in that moment, like, hey, if you're feeling like you need to slow down a little bit, great. If you're feeling this, you know, you need to push through. But it really trains people to just kind of listen to that intuition and that voice in the moment, and keeps them in that, you know, keeps them in that sweet zone, not second guessing themselves and going down the rabbit hole.
I think that you're bringing up a good point, which is that if you give in to the fear, and I know you didn't necessarily use that word, but if you give in to the fear, it creates confusion.
Yeah.
Because people often say to me, you know, I'm really confused, I don't know what to do. And I would say about 98% of the time, it's a person not being truthful with themselves, that they actually do know what they want to do, but they're too afraid to do it, because they're either afraid of failing, yeah, or sometimes even succeeding. Or, like you said a few minutes ago, I get scared sometimes. I don't want to offend somebody.
Yeah.
But I also know that I could really help this person, but I don't want to mess up the relationship. And so, yeah, then we start to spin.
Yes.
Because that fear takes over, and you stop listening to what it is you know you need to do, because that fear of rejection or whatever it might be,
right,
can take over. And then it feels confusing, like, okay, well, now what the hell am I supposed to do?
Yeah, and then you get stuck on that precipice, like, I want to say something, but I don't know. And then you're just like teetering back and forth. And what I fall back on, even if it's hard, but my one process of that, which you actually helped me, is like, if I want this person to have the courage to do something, how can they have it if I can't show them the way? And so if I don't have the courage, if I'm there to help them do this thing, if I don't have the courage in that moment to say, hey, I got to bring this up right now, how are they supposed to face that fear? How can I teach them, coach them how to face the fear and get through it if I can't even do it myself?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it does take courage.
Oh yeah. It takes courage, you know, to work that, to work through it, to work through the trauma, to work through that pain. I mean, something that it feels like right at the beginning, you're going to push up and you're just like, oh man, every time you've pushed kind of right up to this, it's been so traumatic. You've turned and gone the other way. Well, now that's a well-worn pattern,
right?
You know, and also once those patterns get worn in, it takes more to break out of the patterns to build the good pattern.
Right.
You know, and like one of the best analogies I've heard as far as that type of patterning is if you think of, say, like, a school year and kids start going to school and there's some drop-off point of defense. They got to walk across some grass to get in and the grass is new. Well, by, you know, the school year goes along and there's a footpath worn in.
Right.
Summertime comes around, grass grows and it grows right over the path. But when the next school year comes around and you walk on that path, it comes right back. It doesn't take the same amount of time it did the first time to build it in.
Right.
And so you think about human patterning like that. And so trying to understand that once those patterns get worn in, because those patterns are like, you know, eat this food, survival, you know, eat this food, don't survive, right? Find the cave, get away from the tiger or whatever, or not. Those are like basic survival patterns built into us.
Right.
And in our modern lifetime, they can get built in all sorts of
in
ways.
In all kinds of terrible ways.
Yeah, in all sorts of terrible ways. So that courage in the moment is really the biggest thing. And you're talking about confidence, or I don't know if you used that word earlier, exactly what it was, but I was thinking the irony of confidence is that you usually don't get the confidence to do the thing you want to do until you've done it once.
Uh-huh.
And so I always say, like, you have to manufacture confidence. You know, you have to just go, okay, even though I've never done this thing before, I'm building up all these support systems. So once I get out there and go for it, even if things go a little haywire, I feel like I can, you know, I can pull it back in.
You know, I joke with people a lot about the notion that they would like to feel better before they take a chance.
Yeah.
Right? And that would be like being full before you eat, which would be great. We'd save a lot of money.
Yeah.
Right? If we didn't have to ever eat anymore. But I don't know anybody who can be full without food in their belly.
Yeah.
And then it's really the same thing you're talking about, which is you're not going to feel better until you've already proven to yourself that you can master whatever it is. And then you see your body and your emotional body also start to change over the course of time and feel that sense of lightness that you usually don't feel. And that is, I think, what gives people the courage to keep moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
So a part of what I guess I would love for the listeners of this podcast to consider is that if you're in a place of confusion, rather than indulging what it is you're confused about, And then obsessing about it and driving yourself crazy trying to come up with the, you know, with the answer to your confusion. If you could take a step back and ask yourself, okay, maybe I'm not confused, maybe I'm scared, right? And what is it that I'm feeling really frightened that I either know I need to do or stop doing? Because if you live in the confusion, nothing ever solves itself.
Yeah.
But if you're willing to take a step back and recognize that confusion a lot of times is a outgrowth of fear, and you start to focus on what the real issue is, which is that it's really scary to be a human being and to be vulnerable in any kind of a way, whether it's physically or emotionally or both. And that if you start to train your mind to go toward trying to work on the fear in a graceful way, it takes a lot of confusion out of life.
Yeah, it does.
So I guess, I mean, here I'm pontificating a bit, but I just think it comes up a lot in my work and in yours also.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. And so as we talk about the relation of, like, you're just talking about fear, right, in that moment, trying to overcome the fear so that you can do the thing you're trying to do better, One of the things I do is I was a professional bike racer is in the past, I'd take people out and just do like coaching, like just ride a bike. It'd be like a tennis lesson, but you're rolling, right? The same type of thing, more on technique. And one of the biggest things is going through corners. And people explain that, well, you know, every time I come into this corner, I tighten up and I feel like I'm not going to make the corner and everything. And without even watching them go through a corner once, I can almost always tell them exactly what they did. And I go, okay, here's what happened. You came in the corner. You saw the corner going left. You're still going straight. You feel a little bit of panic and your front brake slows you down a lot faster. So you grab the front brake. Well, the problem is when you're going through the corner, if you grab the front brake, it completely screws up your corner. It stands the bike up and it really wants to make you miss the corner. If you're coming into a corner, say trying to lean into your left and you grab the front brake, it will stand you up and make you go right to the outside of the corner. So then that happens to people because they don't understand. Then all of a sudden you're just looking at this hill coming at you. And so you panic even worse, your whole body tightens up and there's your bad corner. And so that one simple thing at the first about slow down a little bit going in, relax and don't panic, go easy. And you build a little bit of confidence and a little bit of momentum as you go through the corner. And I find the emotional work is the same thing. You have to set some realistic goals. Just like we used the analogy earlier about the person afraid of heights, right? Don't go right up to the Empire State Building. Just walk up these stairs right there and look at the view, whatever you're, you know, that's your yeah. wheelhouse. But taking the time and put some realistic goals and at first come back feeling like you maybe could have done a little bit more. Don't, you know, max yourself out. I was just talking to somebody this morning about the word should. Oh man, I should be doing this. I should be feeling better. As soon as you throw should out there, now you're feeling bad that you're not some other place that you think you should be.
Right.
Right. And so it can, you know, it can spin you down the line. And so talking about that, about like, be happy with this 90 minutes. Don't feel bad that it wasn't 2 hours. Come back feeling energized, feeling positive. That's going to carry into the rest of your day rather than get about going, oh man, I used to ride 2 hours and I suck because I'm only riding an hour and a half. Right. Right. So, you know, getting out of that mindset, but it really
is. Which is more than 98% of the people in the world do in the first
place. Yeah. 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 Right. On top of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah. And again, I think that falls back to that process, you know, and finding a good process. And for me, under recognizing the similarities between the physical process and the emotional process, and again, how it's all tied together, you can use building yourself up physically to train you for a similar pattern of what's going to happen emotionally. The stress you're going to feel, the resistance, all that, but knowing if you can just get over that one tough moment right there and get over the hump, then you're like, oh, wow, it is actually better over here. You know, I am feel better. Just like you said, you want to crawl in the closet first thing, but every single time you come back from your walk, you feel better about yourself.
Right.
And that's the key right there. And keep working yourself along and look at where you're at and start there and try and be better from there. Don't look at where you're not at and feel bad that you're not there.
So you're bringing up a really good point again. When a person has suffered a fair bit of trauma, it's really easy to freeze.
Yeah.
Because that freeze mechanism is life-preserving. You know, it's been described as like playing dead, that sort right. of thing. A lot of people that I've worked with who've been sexually abused often feel incredibly ashamed because they didn't fight, they didn't run, they just froze. And it's really important, I think, for people to understand that you don't have control over the way your body responds to trauma.
Right.
And it's really natural to freeze. And it's nothing to be ashamed of because that's what preserves life as a prey animal.
Yeah.
So when you run into somebody who appears to be kind of frozen because of trauma in a physical way, I don't know if you have a specific way that you try to help them. It may be different with every person, but how do you face like that frozenness that you see in people that have been really traumatized?
Yeah, well, it really is. And again, another example of the physical mirroring the emotional on this is, like I used an example earlier about somebody's back. They had, you know, been working out, went to, you know, some type of a group fitness thing as a, you know, mid-50s female without a huge athletic background and ruptured a disc
right
in her back. And the process, when that first started out, as people might have heard, like the term muscle memory, right? If you work out right, your muscles have memory. Well, nerves hold memory as well. And if you have trauma around an area, like they found this out, say for, you know, like stay, you know, stick and ball sports, you know, baseball, football, whatever, other sports. Let's say you had a knee injury where you did something, messed up your knee, tore a ligament, right? Well, after a while you get your surgery. And then when you come out, you start going to physical therapy. What they found that rather just getting in on machines and just trying to work out the muscles, that acupuncture to go in and clear out the nerve energy is the first layer. And if you can go out and clear out the trauma that those nerves hold from that injury, you know, and most people get injured in trauma, everything pulls up and gets tighter, right? If somebody like falls and hits the ground really hard, it's usually, they don't lay out spread eagle in the sun and go, oh, that was great. They're like curled up in a ball going, oh, you know,
right.
Your body pulls in tight to protect. And so you've got to go in and open up that tightness. You got to open up that knee joint and get out the memory of the trauma that your nerves remember before that joint actually will open up so that you can do a good step or a good dip, you know, and have your knee open up and function freely. And so, yeah. And so the carryover of that between, so if I find somebody like this person, I'll use the example, they literally went to do a hold and their back was spasming so bad and it was emotional. They couldn't let go of the energy. They couldn't let go to go just past a certain range of motion because they've been doing that for so long where there was pain, and now there wasn't pain, but the nerves literally couldn't let go. And so what I do at that point is I say, okay, we're at a stopping point going down this road. Let me take a few steps back here and come back a little bit to a point where we can maybe just tackle the problem from a slightly different angle. Like maybe this one exercise and this one hold or doing it at whatever, 100 degrees is too much, but you know what? Maybe we can do that at 25 degrees. And it doesn't dig into yet that emotional part or that trauma,
right?
Or even if it's nerve trauma. And then you go, okay, let's just see if we can get through one of these in the 25 degree range. Oh, you got one? All right, next time around, let's try two. And you start from there. And so I guess really that process is the same, you know, seeing that it's the same process that you work out if it was strictly physical or it was emotional or, you right. know, as they're tied together.
So we only have a few minutes left. I'm just kind of curious what else you think is important to talk about in your practice and in your philosophy as a professional person.
Yeah. Yeah. As I said, I grew up of a life where I was fortunate through racing, you know, up into my early 30s to be able to kind of focus more on the physical side. It wasn't until my early 30s I started having to deal with the, you know, more emotional side, things in my life. But what is the most important for everybody, and this is the biggest part of what I teach through my health coaching, is you have to find like your health routine, your health practice, you know, for whatever is best for you. And for some people, you know, they might need to start off their day with 15 minutes of meditation. Other people, they just might want to go, dude, I got to get up and just get right on the elliptical, just get my body moving. You know, other people, diet's not as big of an issue. Other people, diet is an issue, but you have to find a practice that's for yourself, something that you kind of trial and error that really takes care of yourself and find what's good for you and then practice that. And of course, very simple in its explanation, very difficult to actually implement.
Way harder to do, yes.
Especially when all the emotional, you know, things kick in that want to make you feel bad about yourself or make you feel you don't deserve something or you're not worth something. You know, you know, pulling through those is a lot harder than the physical side. I've found, you know, for working on it. But finding that side of it and also, again, knowing something that we touched on, that like it's okay. You know, yeah, the whole thing about certain types of people who diagnose and they always just want to find out what's wrong with you and solve right. that problem rather than saying, hey, man, you're this awesome person who's got all these great parts to you and you can do all this, but we've got a few blocks right here, right? You might be able to do presses and push-ups and all this. You might even be able to do squats, but man, a dip on that left side of your hip is not going to happen. You'll, right. You know, and so you try and identify those spots, but again, focus so much on the positive side of it, you know, and not focus on the negative. And, you know, as you know, I'm almost sometimes to a fault, a half cup, half full person, you know, like beyond. I just always believe that there's a way to make it happen. You know, maybe that's the positivity. And so trying to You know, identify what you need and then find a practice, but that practice takes repetition. You know, one of the reasons that I have shifted more in focusing on like whole body, like health coaching, as opposed to say just hourly clients is because, you know, in 10 years of after, you know, only working with professionals of all people, I could tell you how many people come in and they say, hey, you know, I'm turning my health around. So I want to work on my diet, you know, I'm going to whatever, do this, take a little bit more time and medicate. And I want to work with a trainer, you know, 2 times a week. And I'm great. So I'm the trainer guy in that equation. The other stuff they're supposedly going to do. And they say, well, give me a little bit of guidelines on food. So I give it to them, but they didn't hire me to do that, you know, and right. Do this and this and that. And 99% of those people don't reach that goal. I mean, maybe 98 don't. I could give 2% because people that come in and come into me, I realized if they could just wake up in the morning and got what they need to do, they wouldn't come into me to do it. You know, they wouldn't come into me to ask me. And they're thinking, hey, I just need you for the physical side and I'm going to do all this other stuff, but they don't do all the other stuff because that stuff's hard to do. And there's probably more emotional component attached to it. And then what happens? They get frustrated that they're not losing the weight or doing whatever else they wanted to do because I only see them for 2 hours a week.
Right.
And then if, you know, the whole rest of that time they're doing counterproductive stuff, they're not going to see the results and then they're just going to bail out altogether.
Right.
And so holding people accountable and having something where it's like, hey, even if we got to switch times or obstacles show up, we are meeting 2 times a week. Even if one of those times is to sit and walk for 10 minutes and sit and have a coffee and talk about things, right. We're going to meet and show up and be accountable. And it's the same thing with professional athletes that I work with. They need somebody that's in the fight, that's with you, you know, that has some experience that can help you out, that you can work as a team together and help you get through these hard parts. And that's really, like I said, what I preach, why I mostly just do one-on-one work. I'm like a fine cabinet maker. You know, I don't just go to IKEA and then just stick them up in like an hour, put them together. You know, I'm like building, handcrafting stuff. And
well, it's a very comprehensive approach.
A very what?
Comprehensive.
Yeah, a very comprehensive approach. And I've it's not something that I set out like, oh, I believe it's this way, so now I'm going to build a practice around this. It's really just through experience. And I'm a big, for whatever training I've gotten, I'm a big experiential learner. And really, you know, one of the things that my athletes have always liked with me, if I say, hey, try this electrolyte drink or this supplement, I've tried it myself. Guinea pig myself on as much as I can beforehand. And so at least I have some basis, some experience. And why I said, you know, people I talk to, why I said, I'm not like talking to you from like high and mighty. I'm like in the trenches. I've gone through this and I've had times where I'm like, holy crap, how am I even going to get up and go out and face the day? And I'm like, one step at a time.
Yeah.
If you can literally make one step with your right foot, then that opens the door to then make a step with the left foot and then a right and then a left and a right and a left. And pretty soon you're 100 yards down the road, a half mile down the road. And so personal experience, understanding that everybody is a different and unique person and they might need something different. And then having the courage to follow my intuition.
That's a great recipe.
Yeah.
So if my listeners would like to get a hold of you, what would be the best way for them to make connection with you, Darren?
You know, really the easiest way is my bike business is just santabarbaracycling.com. I mean, we're in Santa Barbara and I cycle. So if you just go santabarbaracycling.com, it'll pull up my website and I have an email and a phone number on there.
Okay.
And they can just contact me directly. And I don't filter anything. It's just me. So if you go on there and click send to Darren, I'll get that email. Or if you shoot me a text or pick up the phone, I'll be the one who'll answer it.
So Santa Barbara Cycling.
SantaBarbaraCycling.com. Yep.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, I really, really appreciate you coming in today. I think this has been an incredible interview. It's very inspiring. And I just think it's going to make a huge difference in people's, maybe their attitude in getting healthy. Especially if they can find someone much like yourself who sees them not just as a body, but also a complete human being.
Well, great. Thank you. It's been really, it's a great experience. And as you know about me, I'm a very private person, even though I get out and talk to people. So this podcast is obviously easier than the first one that I did. That one was, talk about an example of following my intuition, that everything right. in my body is saying, dude, just do not go in and do this. You don't like to talk about yourself, let alone personal stuff. And I pushed over that fear and did it and walked out of that first podcast saying, I don't even care if anybody ever listens to it. Just the fact that I did it was my biggest thing for me to get over. But then from that, what came out of that has just been spectacular for myself and other people as well.
Well, to remind my listeners again, Darren talked about how he saved his daughter's life. And I just want to make sure everybody knows that actually I got a response later in the year from someone who just stumbled upon your episode and it actually saved her life.
Right.
Which to me is like astounding.
If only, you know, when I did that podcast, because I was so personal, I never told one person that I did it. I just figured whoever it is meant to find, it will find. And
Well, now it's time to come out of the podcast closet.
Out of the podcast closet. But to know that, and that is right there. Getting over a fear in yourself to go, you know what? Something's got to be better on the backside of this. And it couldn't have worked out any better.
Good. So, well, I'm sure I'll have you back again sometime. I really do appreciate your coming here.
And I appreciate you having me in. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
We appreciate our listeners and are interested in your comments and suggestions. Feel free to email us at fearmeoutpodcast@gmail.com. If you are interested in becoming a sponsor for this podcast, please email us at fearmeoutpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. See you next time.